Hi everyone, Sane Maid here. This video is brought to you by a donation from Roger. He didn't give me a topic, so I thought I'd use it to share this video I did with Terrence Pop a while back. I was only in about half of it, so that's the half I'm going to share. But before I do, let me first tell everyone about today's sponsor, the MGTOW Book Collection Part 2. Whether you're getting camel toe in Cambodia, banging babes in burkas in Turkey, or taking Polaroids of ladyboys in Thailand, Luca Vendetti has a series of books to make you live the dream. His new three-booklet series includes How to Live on $500 a Month in Cambodia, Turkey, and Vietnam, in addition to his classic How to Retire on $200K in Southeast Asia. He also has the MGTOW book. Visit MGTOWBooks.com and use the promo code SANDMAN to get 10% off. Now available in four formats: PDF, Mobi for Kindle, EPUB, and text-to-speech MP3. Sponsor link is down below. Anyways, here's the video, so enjoy.
Might work out in our favor because on the drive back home, I was thinking there's paranormal stories, and then you have the paranormal stories that are kind of no one has ever had before. You know what I mean? Like, people have had ghost stories and alien stories and precognitive stories, but when you have paranormal stories that you can't explain and you have no frame of reference, I think that would be the true definition of a paranormal story.
Okay. I can jive with that.
So I think like what you were mentioning was a ghost story in prison in Iraq. Is that correct?
Yeah. Abu Ghraib prison. It was seen by at least six of my soldiers. Usually it was walking up the stairs to the upper floor. And, you know, it's hard to like say that it's imaginary when you have six different dudes see it. And one guy I literally trusted my life. So that one is, I personally did not see it, and I'm glad I didn't. I don't need any more of that nightmare fuel. I've got enough nightmares from that place. I'm good.
So besides that one, did you share any other ones?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Have you had any other ones that you would say would be unexplainable even for the unexplained?
Yeah, I'll tell it to you right now.
Sure. Okay.
Again, Abu Ghraib prison. It's about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. I just got out of a battalion bub briefing, which is battle update briefing, because I had three platoons scattered to the four winds around Baghdad. And when you look, I'll show it right here. Like right here, see this picture I have my mouse on right here? Okay, that one there. And you can see all the way down there, there's a long hallway. Hang on, somebody's fucking calling me. I'll call her back. All right, so you can see that long hallway right there. Well, it's lit with iridescent lights all the way down.
Did you say incandescent?
You know, what it was, the long tube lights, what are they called?
Fluorescent.
Fluorescent. That's it. It's a really harsh light. And the lights are on 24/7, 365 in that lower hallway. I come around the corner. There's nobody there. As plain as day, a jet black silhouette of a person. I don't know if it's a man or woman, because I remember seeing the legs do this. Walked across the hallway underneath the lights and into an alcove to the right. It was maybe 50 yards from me. It didn't take me, I mean, literally, it took me almost no time to get there. I walk down there. I look into the alcove. There is no other way a human could leave, because there were three doors there. All of them were locked. I couldn't explain it. That one really freaked me out there. So, is that a definition of something that defies explanation?
Well, it defies explanation, but people have seen ghosts, right? So you've got tons of experiences of people seeing these ghosts or apparitions or whatever you want to call them.
Uh-huh.
But I'm talking about, you know, we take paranormal experiences and we classify them in things. We say, this is a ghost experience, and this is an alien UFO experience, and, you know, this is, you know, a precognitive experience. You know, so we classify them. But when you have something that's an outlier for even the weird, you don't know how to classify. You talk to people about it and they're like, I've never heard of that before. You go on the internet and you can't find any stories of people having any similar experiences.
Do you have any stories like that? Or
I've got a few. It just depends on okay, so I've got some that are connected with dreams and okay. entities in dreams. I've had dreams where I've been able to kind of hijack another person's consciousness in the past and be in that person and then gain information that would be valid for the present. I also have information with regards to tungsten incandescent light bulbs. So when you were saying light, you know, harsh light, you're probably describing fluorescent that's around 4,000 degrees Kelvin.
Yeah, yeah.
Tungsten incandescent is usually 2,800 degrees Kelvin.
That's information I don't know.
Go ahead.
That's information I have no idea what, I didn't even know that. Thank you.
Yeah, so different types of light have different color temperatures. So what I've noticed, it took me literally 10 to 15 years and maybe 50 to 100 experiences before I finally noticed that precognitive dreams for me were connected directly to places in the future where there were two things present, or three in some cases. The color temperature was 3,200 degrees Kelvin, which is about the tungsten, the orange light you'd see on a street light.
Okay.
So the light would have to be nearby and it would have to be that frequency or that color temperature. Then also there would have to be a highly emotional experience. So it would have to be either really positively charged or negatively charged.
Okay.
And then the third thing is it usually was near a body of water. It could be an ocean. It could be a river. It could be, a pond. It could be something, but it would normally be, maybe 50, 100 yards away.
Yep.
At most. So again, it's hard to kind of predict the future because you have to have this genuine emotional experience. You have to be near this color of light temperature, and you have to be near body water. So it would happen normally when I would travel. So I would see, I would see the places I would travel to before I went to them. And, it was either a good experience or a bad experience. So, it's a combination of both. But what I noticed in the future, I would actually be sending myself the message, telling myself, staring at the orange light above. And I'm like, why am I staring at the light in all these dreams? It's because I had figured out that that's how you, that was a critical element in figuring out how precognition works. And I was trying to tell my past self, by just staring at the light, I was just passing myself a message.
All right, what you're explaining there is it's called a hijack point, and people who actually do lucid dreaming, when they go into the dream in the beginnings, they don't really know that they are dreaming, and then they have the hijack point where they hijack their dream and then they control it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a few lucid dreams. I haven't had enough, but if you could lucid dream and you could have precognition, then technically you could tell yourself in the lucid dream, I want to dream of the future. And then technically you could get that information passed down to you.
Well, I would definitely like to try that because, I'm kicking myself for not buying Bitcoin for the past 10 goddamn years.
Look, it's crazy because everything I do, it's almost like I'm 5 minutes too late for everything. Mm-hmm. I bought Bitcoin, it was at, 15,000-16,000, and here we are sitting at 20, and my average is around 17. So I'm up a little bit, but I was a lot higher and you were a lot higher and we were doing great, but don't worry, it's going to come back in a year and a half. I think everything kind of happens for a reason. If you don't go through the hardships in your life, then you don't grow, you don't evolve. People talk about karma, they say good karma is, good luck. And it's not. Good karma means that you're learning lessons, right? So we both learned the lesson, but we should have bought Bitcoin. And the worst part was people were telling us to buy it. And we were just writing them off.
Yep.
Absolutely
correct. That's actually a pretty good one. You talked about a precognition kind of thing.
Yeah. So I'll give you an example, but it gets more complicated than that because I've had experiences. I was shooting a bar mitzvah. I was at the Air Canada Center. Well, back then it was called the ACC Air Canada Center. And, the night before I dreamt that I was there and one of these kids there, she fell and hurt her head. And So I was like, I was in the dream. I was like, I'm going to make sure that tomorrow I do nothing for this kid, so nothing bad happens. And then I talked to a couple entities in the dream and they said, you can't stop this. It's going to happen. Mm. Right. So I've had dreams where I could see the future and then I would go in and I would alter the future and change the course of events. But this time they were telling me you can't change the course of events. And so I went out of my way to change the course of events every single way possible, right? Like the kids were, you know, I was taking pictures of them on the rafters. They were at the top, you know, I was worried they were going to fall off the balcony. Right. So I was paranoid the whole time. So I was watching myself. And towards the end of the night, the photographer I was working with, I was doing video, she was doing photography. She gives me her camera and says, can you take a few photos of the kids? And I'm like, I didn't think anything of it. Sure. And so I took the camera and I was aiming it down. I was standing up on one of these metal stands and the lens of the camera just fell right off the camera and hit this kid whack in the head. Mm. Right. So that was the thing I couldn't control. And then I was freaked out. I thought I was going to get sued and all this bad stuff was going to happen. And so she was crying, screaming. She left. She ran upstairs to the hotel area. And, you know, I left and I was like, oh shit, this is going to be trouble. And then the photographer called. She's like, you won't believe what happened. I go, I'm being sued. And she's like, no, the father, he broke his hip and he's in the hospital right now. And so like, yeah, so that experience got superseded by something that was far more painful and problematic. So whatever these entities are and however the timelines work, they meddle with things in such a way that like they go left and you think you're going right. And, you know, they fake you out back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have something similar.
Sure.
All right. So again, this is Iraq. I had a dream and, it was one of those dreams that goes on for a long time. We're talking like the dream went on for 5 or 6 years. And,
what do you mean 5 or 6 years in the dream dream. Felt like it went
in the dream? It went on, it went on for 5 or 6 years. And, I had a couple of my soldiers contact me, and this is after in the dream, I went to Iraq, I came back, and then I had some soldiers contact me in regards to, having unexplained illnesses. And, in the dream, it all revolved around basically a whole bunch of scrap tanks that had barbed wire around them. And, these guys were fucking around in there and then, you know, they come back and as the dream went on, they got sick. Well, we landed in Baghdad and I remember, we got in our initial convoy to go to Abu and we rolled right by this huge area of destroyed tanks from the first Gulf War. And they had barbed wire around them and there were signs like, you know, in three different languages, you know, don't fucking go in there. So I'm like, okay, I need to keep my people out of there because this is horseshit. Somebody's going to get fucked up. And sure as shit, like 3 or 4 months later, I'm staging to leave. Baghdad to go to Abu. And I look over and, you know, I get in line and we have four vehicles are from my unit. And there's the rest of them are for other units going to the same place. And I see three knuckleheads, you know, walk over to the fucking tanks. And then they start fucking with their triple concertina barbed wire. And I get out and I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Get the fuck away from there. Can't you read the goddamn sign? And they're like, oh, and they go back in. And I'm like, you know what? I think I just saved those three dudes' lives. Because a lot of people fucked around in there and got sick as shit. So I think it's depleted uranium or something. Or I don't know what was going on there. But that was like a premonition type dream I had. So it is what it is.
So you avoided doing that?
No. I literally told those three guys. I caught them before they went in to where the tanks were.
But that was all in the dream. You didn't actually see that in real life.
No. In the dream, I saw them go in there and fuck around.
And
then as the dream progressed, they got fucking sick.
Ah, you saw the 7 year forward. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
So in real world, in the real time, in the real world, I'm like, oh, those are three guys. And then I had that deja vu moment. I'm like, wait a minute. What are you doing?
Yeah, yeah. So you saw this lucidly in the dream. So you saw it clearly, everything.
Yes.
You had all that information.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. So is that the only time that's happened, or have you had other experiences like that?
When I was younger, I used to have similar things happen all the time. It just seemed to happen less and less as I got older.
Okay. And so think back to that experience. So was there anything in that dream where you were standing right where the barbed wire was? Was there a light source? What time of day was it? Was there a river nearby?
No. It was middle of Iraq. Well, there were some, come to think of it, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a lot of water, but there was drainage ditches and water, because the water table in Iraq is quite high. So I would say there probably was water there.
So Euphrates River?
It wasn't near that, but I'm just saying, like, when you go into Iraq, you land at Baghdad, you look out into the horizon, you know, it looks really green, but it's really not. But there is a lot of water, and that's the only thing that was there. There wasn't any lights on. It was the middle of the day.
Okay.
But
was there like a power source nearby?
Not really.
Okay, so you weren't over like electrical lines or anything like that?
No.
But emotionally, like with the first time in the dream, were you like emotionally you felt the upset that happened 7 years in the future?
Yeah.
From that point in the dream, and that pissed you off. You had that emotional. So that emotional incident that happened way, way in the future, that probably got sent back.
Yep.
And so that's what you were feeling. And that's kind of, so I think emotions are kind of a way to unlock future potential timelines. I think that's kind of what it's about.
Okay. All I know is I'm just sitting there doing my thing, and then I see these three knuckleheads, and then I had the little flashback from the deja vu. And I'm like, oh, no. No. Get the fuck out of there. You're going to fuck yourself up. No.
Look, I saved my brother's life doing this. So I dreamt that he was going to die. So in the dream, he's lying there in a coffin, and I'm looking down at the coffin. And then there's another version of him standing next to me telling me, that's me. I'm going to die from swine flu.
Wow.
And I got that information. And I knew where I was when I heard that and all this kind of stuff. So when I heard that he was sick, I was in the exact same spot when in the dream where I heard he was sick. So I went to go see him, and he wasn't doing well. Like, he just like fainted, collapsed. And I was like, he's like, I'm going back to bed. I'm going to be fine, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, I'm calling an ambulance. So I called an ambulance, and his blood pressure was down to like, I don't know, like 50 something over something else. Like, he would have gone into a coma, and that would have been it.
Yeah. He was going septic.
So they put, I think, 6 or 7 IV bags they pumped into him to keep his blood pressure up.
Yeah.
And saved his life. And the next day, he went to the hospital. And the next day, they're like, did they find out what it was? And they're like, swine flu. Right?
Uh-huh.
So what's really weird is, so there's this dead version of him that's floating around in the dreams. And this dead version keeps coming back to me once in a while, giving me warnings. So about a year and a half ago, I was filming a video in somebody's driveway. It was during COVID. And we weren't filming indoors.
Uh-huh.
So I set up a green screen right in front of her garage door. And all of a sudden, you know, the night before, I'm dreaming about this like animal, and it's this like grayish black animal, and it fell over, and I don't know if it was dead. I was like, this is really weird. Like, this animal is just lying there. And then the dream, like, my brother was pointing at the animal, like trying to warn me about the animal. Right. So I set up the green screen. We're shooting the video. All of a sudden, this raccoon just starts coming up to me, just like randomly starts walking up to me. And I'm like, this raccoon is, you know, a little too friendly. Like, you know, these animals usually don't do this. So, you know, the first thing I can think of is, you know, there's some kids there. I'm like, put the kids between you and the raccoon, you know, that way, if anything happens, really. Anyway, I know it's not the most, positive of experiences, but, you know, I just kind of like, you know, ducked around, and I was like, and I told him, like, you guys got to get out of here too. Right. Like, this animal's not acting correct. Right. So then the animal kind of walked over and just fell over. And then it looked exactly like the animal in the dream that was just lying there on its side. Mm. So I don't know if it was rabies or if it was something else, but this thing looked like it was ready to bite me. So I had to get the hell out of there.
Yeah, you don't want to get no rabies, bro. That shit's almost always fatal.
Yeah. So there's the thing, like, how am I getting a warning from this brother, this dead brother who's still kind of floating around? So I don't know if it's like parallel, like, consciousness or parallel universe or like how, you know, where is this all coming from?
Yeah. Well, when you look, there's a lot of theories out there for the infinite universe model. So that's weird.
Is it just like one is fully actualized and then that's the only one, or are there parallel ones? Like, we don't know, right? Don't, like, there's just too many. What's really interesting is, like, Philip K. Dick had these experiences too. Like, he saved his son's life. He found out that his son was going to die from hernia. And when his son got sick, he went and told the doctors about the hernia, and they didn't even know he had that problem. They're like, we're not going to check that. And he's like, just check it. And they checked and they found it.
Yep.
And they saved his life. So, and he talked about this, you know, he talked about how, you know, we're in a computer generated dream world. A lot of his books are based off of alternate realities and timelines that he saw.
Okay.
So, you know, there's actually a talk that he did in the 70s. If you ever have a chance to, like, go online, he talks about how we're in the Matrix. We're in a computer generated world, the Matrix, right? And so it's like, what is this guy like? So the Matrix idea was taken, you know, Wachowski brothers or Wachowski siblings or whatever you want to call them, took his idea from the 70s and then they just kind of renamed it and reworked it into their film, which is kind of neat.
Well, that's cool. I mean, they're good writers.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, but what I'm saying is, like, so if Philip K. Dick was seeing this, you know, he saw that reality where the Nazis won, he saw reality where, you know, freedom of speech was taken away and, mm-hmm. you know, all this kind of stuff. So, you know, these things are all possible, but we don't have any, you know, concrete ways. Like, for example, you know, you had the dream with those three guys with the barbed wire. Now, if there was some way that you could, like, fully take that information and, like, make it usable and make it, repeat, like, so make the process work. And so you actually know the day. So, for example, I thought, like, you know, if I'm going to have an experience and I'm going to see the future and it's going to happen on a specific day, if I do a rotating desktop background that changes a picture every single day into another picture, then the day I have that experience, if that light is near me and it's a precognitive experience, then I'll be able to time the day and I'll know which day ahead of time that experience will happen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you. Hey, have you actually come across, do you have any of your own ghost stories or anything?
I haven't had any ghost stories. The only one I had, like, I heard a friend that I trust, really, he's basically told me that, you know, he was by the Old Mill River, mm-hmm. in western part of Toronto. And then he saw this, like, screaming woman pushing a baby carriage, like, just pushing it down by the river and, like, disappearing into oblivion. And it freaked him out. Like, he completely, like, was not happy about that. But all right. I haven't had any ghost experiences, no.
All right, so stand by. All right, so I got one here. And this is a ghost story. And it came out of the mouth of an individual who survived the Holocaust and World War II. And the reason I knew this guy is this. When I was a child, I lived in Oak Park, Michigan, right off Coolidge between 8 Mile and 9 Mile. The area was heavily populated with Jewish people. All right. I have nothing against Jewish people. A lot of them, I have a lot of friends that are Jewish growing up. And this guy, he lived 6-7 houses down from me. And I used to mow his grass for like $2 or $4 or something, like once a week or once every other week. Great guy. And he was old at this time. And I heard that he died in like 1985, long after I moved out of the neighborhood. But they used to call him Tolly. And he was, at that time, he was no longer a rabbi, but he was, you know, he'd been a rabbi in the past and he was doing something else. And he was basically going to retire. Guy was old as dirt. And the way it was explained to me is him and his older brother got moved to a camp. It was a labor camp called Nerevengamia. I never heard of it. Nevengamme. I had to go look it up because I remember the name, but I didn't until I saw it. It was one of the sub camps, and he was 16 years old. That's why he said that he survived, because he was so young, and young people are indestructible. So he was like 15, 16 when he got put in there, and his brother was like 22, 23-ish, 5-7 years older than him, something like that. Well, they both went to this one camp, 1942, winter. Older brother gets gangrene, from frostbite. It happens. But the way this guy explained it to me when I was – and listen, this is an elderly man talking to a 10, 11-year-old kid. So I'm remembering this story across this vast span of time. So it gets a little dicey. So you got to bear with me. And the way he explained it, where the guards could literally kill you for whatever reason without anyone really asking any questions. So what they would do, and to get rid, they used to call them the useless eaters, is if you were lame or hurt and the guard saw it, they either shot you in the morning or they executed you at night. That's just the way he explained it to me. It sounds terrible. So his brother got executed in the evening, coming back from where they were doing their work. I don't know if he was working at the brick factory or working at the lumber yard. I'm not sure. And crushed him. And then he goes on during when he explained to me, he goes, well, my brother was physically dead, but he's been with me my entire life. And the way I explained it was this. He'd been married once before. And his mother died, or his wife had died of a brain aneurysm. And he was coming back from the hospital. She had just died. You got to bear with me. This is a really sad one. He's driving down the street. And as he's pulling the driveway, he sees his brother and his wife on the goddamn porch. Just for a few seconds, and then they were gone. And yep. He's like, it was literally like somebody reached into me and like just turned the grief down in, 50%. Because he knew his brother, his dead brother, came and collected his now dead wife. And it literally, like, you could see it in his eyes when he would tell you the story. I was like, oh, my God. You know, it's making me sad now because, I understand what all that loss feels like. But as a 10 or 11-year-old child, it was just kind of, I knew it was a bad thing, but there was no emotion attached to it because I really hadn't experienced a lot of people dying at 10. So
yeah, I've had, in terms of, you see, I haven't had the ghost experiences, but I've had strange things surrounding death. So the first time something weird happened was, I was dating this chick. I was about 25. The relationship was getting close to the end. And the last time I saw her grandmother before she passed away, the grandmother just started breaking down and crying, and like she wouldn't let me leave the house. Like it was just this weird experience. And everyone was like, Grandma, what the hell is going on? Right?
Yeah.
Like and so they couldn't, like, I couldn't figure out why she was acting like this. Nobody, because she was crying. She was like, you can't go. And I'm like, I don't know. Why was she acting like that? And a week and a half later, she's dead. Right? She got like, she just suddenly died. But she wasn't doing that to anybody else. She was only doing that to me. Mm-hmm. Right? And I don't know if it was like the pain that, it took me a long time to recover after that relationship, and like 3, maybe 4 years to fully recover. Like it took so maybe she was trying to like console me for that. I don't know. Like maybe she was just trying to pass on the message that death is not, like the end.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like there's just a lot of kind of weird things like that. Every time. So when she died, when she was buried, all of a sudden I'm looking up and I look up at the clouds, and this is like this, the cloud area parts, and it's just like this ray of light just like strikes the area where we're at in the cemetery, right? And nobody's noticing this. This is another thing I notice. Like, whenever I go to a funeral, I notice things that other people aren't necessarily seeing.
Yeah.
Like, so it's usually it's a cloudy day at most funeral days that I go to. And then when the actual burial is happening, the clouds seem to open up, right? And I'm like, why does that happen? I don't know. It's just really weird.
Yeah.
And even my father mentioned this a few times. And then, so every time I go to a funeral, I pay close attention to the weather and the lighting. And then I noticed these patterns over and over again. Like, for example, there was this other funeral. The guy, you know, he didn't want to have a, I think he was just cremated, but he had like a wake, and it was in this giant theater. And he had three kids, and he really liked two of them, but he didn't like the third one. And so when the two kids that were speaking, you know, the kids that he liked, the light would actually shine through the windows from, and then the moment the kids would stop speaking, the light would shut off from the outside, right? And then when the kid went up who was he didn't like, there was no light, right? So you're like, what the fuck? And I pointed it out to a few people, and they're like, what's going to happen with the next person? And they're like, oh, the light's on him, the light's off of that person. Oh, now it's coming back. It's like, what is this? Like,
here's another addition to that Tolle story, right? So I was in high school when he passed away. I believe I was a junior. And I remember going, you know, to his service, and his kids were there. His daughter was, I don't know, she was probably in her 40s-ish at that time. And she gave up, and she was talking about her father, and she went on to explain why she wasn't really totally distraught. It's because like a couple days before he died, you know, his daughter was there, his extended family was there, and he was like totally cool with it because he'd seen his brother standing next to him at his bed, and he knew that when his time came, his brother was going to take him to the other side.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit. Whew. That was a good one.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, you could actually have a good relationship with, you know, here's my thing. Like, it's not the dead that, like, he, you know, his brother is dead and he's coming to get him, right? So there's just this linear idea that you die and then you become this spirit thing, right?
Yep.
But you die in the future, and as a spirit, you might be able to travel back into the past.
Who knows? So
you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Who knows what can happen?
Well, no, but like, it's weird because I get information from people who are going to pass away one day, but they go back into the past and they tell me things. And I'm like, how does that work? They're still alive, but they're a ghost at that future point, and that's where they're telling me the information. It's really bizarre. Here's another one. So when my grandmother passed away, my mother went to the funeral, and she said there was this little bird, and it was just like hanging around everybody. It was walking on the ground and between everybody, and nobody could figure out what's going on with this bird. Like, it was just like walking in between everybody. And so I didn't think too much of this. And then a few years later, I found this video where this woman said that when she dies, she's going to come back as a red cardinal, and she was going to take over the red cardinal's like consciousness and come and visit her daughters. So there's this video of these two.
I've seen that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So if you're talking about the dead, they might actually be able to control more simple biological organisms.
Yeah, maybe. Never thought of that, but.
Well, how do you explain that bird? Like, you know, people will say, oh, that's just a coincidence. It's like, yeah, the bird is just, will not let go. The bird is just like stuck on them.
Yep. And there's a couple, I saw another story about the guy whose daughter passed away. And they, after she passed away, he literally always had butterflies around him. And he knew, it's like, he's like, that's my daughter visiting me. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Speaking of weird animals and things, like, I've had weird experiences with like crows and ravens in the Southwest. Like, they would just follow me, land on my car in like large groups, and they were warning me not to go someplace. And I listened to the warning. And then the moment I did, and I decided to change my travel itinerary, they didn't follow me anymore.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Here's another story, you guys. I told this one to the supporters out there, so I'm going to apologize to you if you've already heard this. I'm going to tell it again because there's a lot of people here who haven't heard this one. All right. Now, this individual in 1982, worked at Walter Reed Army Hospital. He was an X-ray tech, and his job was to run the X-ray machines and run all of the equipment that needed to be done. He was lower on the totem pole. He only did one enlistment. So, he'd been there for about a year. Nothing really happened. It was just, you go in, you do your shift, you leave. And he would work afternoon and night shift because they always had to have somebody, working the equipment 24/7, 365. Well, on the floor he's on, and this is one of the older buildings at Walter Reed. I mean, when I was there, I've actually seen these buildings. They're probably gone now, but they did not look good. They were run down as shit. And they started upgrading. So they tore down walls. They were redoing electrical because the building used to have knob and tube, which is fucking incredibly unreliable and dangerous. And it had... they were putting in copper piping. So, there are areas on the floor where, it's ripped down to the studs or ripped all the way down. And it's... So once that started happening, he started noticing a lot of things on the list, like the lower level shit here. A lot of murmurings, a shadow here and there. He would set things down to have them disappear, but he would find them 1 or 2 days later somewhere else, or they just would never show up. And he thought it was fairly odd because he worked, this would happen at the night shift that would go to 6 in the morning. There's nobody there. And things would just disappear. And let me go through this. All right. So we talked about the muffled voices, losing small objects, blah, blah, pens and pencils. All right. He goes on to explain towards the end, and when he finally left, he would set things down, literally. He would set it down, turn around, come back, gone. That happened. It started getting a little crazier. He finished up his enlistment, and then later on, went on to become a physician assistant. And in the story, he says he, between 1983, 84 to when he retired in 2018, he had worked at 6 hospitals, major hospitals around the DC area and New York, New Jersey. All of them were haunted without exception. And, I would like, I'd probably send this guy an email, see if he has any other stories, but, I thought that was a pretty good one. And the thing is another common thread in the lower level hauntings is everything could be fine until you start changing shit in the environment. And then it wakens people up to keep doing their craziness. I don't know. I thought that one was pretty fascinating.
What do you mean, like a renovation?
Yeah. They were renovating it. They were putting in copper pipes and redoing the electrical, and they were tearing down whole areas. They're ripping down to the studs or sometimes tearing down the walls. And it literally, I don't know, you could say it awoke in the building maybe. I don't know. So.
Well, I think in terms of waking up buildings, I don't know if you've had any past life things before. Or have you had any of those?
Yeah.
So have you figured out who you were in the past life? Did you visit that place? Did you get any information that you could only get that from that person?
Well, okay. I did not actually get a name of the person I think I might have been. It all revolves around Port Townsend, Washington State. I went there with a buddy of mine, his wife, and one of her friends. It was a setup thing. It worked out pretty good. But literally, we get out of the car and we start, doing the tour of, the fort. And I had fucking been there before. I knew what certain rooms were before they would say it. I could envision myself, walking guard along the row of cannons that were there. Because back in the day, we didn't like Canada and we had that fort there to protect the Puget Sound from the Canadians. But you know, that was weird, and like literally, I knew I had been either a sailor or a soldier at that post at some point in the past. And I knew all, I mean, it was weird. It was literally like I had read the script and then walked on to the area, and I knew everything that was there. It was very surreal.
Okay, so yeah, if you had information on that person, what I noticed is there's actually a gap between every single previous incarnation of 35 years for me. And the weird thing is the last two incarnations, they lived on the exact same property on Long Island.
Wow.
Yeah. So if people can do some research and find who those people, those characters were. But one of them was William Floyd, one of the founding fathers of the United States. But he's like not really known all that much. And so what happened with him was he had this giant property down there, and you know, he had all these slaves. So when I visited the property back about maybe 10, 15 years ago now, I went upstairs in the house, and I was the only person on the tour. A lot of the founding fathers, they still keep the historic houses, you know, intact, but nobody usually goes to these places. So I go in there, and the tour guide, you know, I'm just walking around with her. She asked me, "Do you know what that is?" And I'm like, she's pointing behind me, and I haven't even turned around, and I don't even know what it is. And I'm like, "It's a scope." And she's like, "But you haven't even looked at it." It's like, "It's a scope." And she's like, "Do you know what it's used for?" I'm like, "To look at the slaves through the window." It's like, right? Uh-huh. So, and then a few days later, I went down to like Independence Hall in Philadelphia, and I wanted to like identify the seat where William Floyd would have been sitting in. And I, you know, you're in this room and there's about 60, 70 seats, and I'm guessed. I'm like, that chair right there. And then I asked the tour people, like, where did the representatives from New York State sit? And they're like, right there. It's like, shit.
There you go. Right? Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, I had deja vu like every other day, you know, up until like 9th or 10th grade in high school. And then I used to have a recurring dream that I literally had from like the age of 4 until like 7th or 8th grade. And in that dream, I die, and I see myself die, and I could feel myself die. And the way it always started is I'm on the edge of town. There's people on the left and right of me walking me to the gallows to get hung. I go up there and I fight. I scream. It's a very fucking horrible thing. They put the rope on. I don't even get the hood. I feel the forceful chiropracting happening. And then, yeah, I actually flow out of my body and I wake up. And I had this dream all the time. And it literally bothered me to no end. And I tried the lucid dreaming as a kid. I had a really hard time controlling it for a while. And then it went on and on, and every time the dream would start, I'd always be farther back from the town, and there'd be more people on the left and right, and it's usually people I had met in the recent time, to the point where I'm walking like maybe half a mile or a mile to the gallows, and it's people I know I've met along each side. And the last time I had it, I remember I hear the off-key electric guitar music. There's, you know, it's black and white. I can see like heat lightning out in the distance. And I know I'm getting hung. So like literally I'm like, I got this. They're like, I'm like, yeah, don't touch me. I'm good. And I like willingly walk down there, walk up the stairs, you know, on the gallows. And I remember there's a dude with a top hat there. And I'm like, hey, how you doing? Yeah. And I grab the rope, put it on, put it under my, right under the right ear, and I look over and I go, do it. And they fucking pull the thing. I fall through, same thing. I die. I float away. Never had the dream again after that. It's like once I accepted it, it stopped.
Well, you were being given a message, right? And you just weren't accepting the message.
I have no idea. I have no idea what that message was, other than maybe I was a bad guy in a past life. I don't know. But I thought it was pretty interesting. And,
there's the theory that, you know, if we're in a simulation, then there might only be so many of us that are conscious, right?
Could be.
So if we're having these experiences, we're like rebooting and then we're reinteracting with one another. And, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of validity to that, because whenever I would travel, I would overwhelm. If you play a video game, they have like zones. Like if you play World of Warcraft and you go from one area to another, and sometimes the zone takes time to load, right? Mm-hmm. So the computer will kind of lag and have to wait until that area loads. So if you're in current reality, and if it takes time to load between one part of like one geography and another, then that's going to cause the computer to have to work really hard.
It's a lag.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Like if instead of the lag actually happening, maybe the dream world is where we boot up those things. So that way you can keep the seamlessness of the reality going. Right. Maybe. So, you know, like that's why we have our off time, because, you know, the next day it has to get like preloaded and all the timelines kind of have to connect.
Yeah.
It's a theory, right? It's a theory. It's one of those things.
All right. Well, say, man, I'm going to be hitting super chats here. So if you want to stay on, go ahead.
I just wanted to share one last story and then take off. So
okay,
just
what
wanted
is it?
To, you got like 5-10 minutes?
I sure do.
All right. So this is the weirdest one. And a couple people in the chat actually recommended I talk about this. So I'm in this dream. I'm sleeping with this chick. She's in her early to mid 20s. I remember her chest being almost completely flat. I'm like, I don't like girls that have no, you know, tatas. Like, what's going on here? Anyway. So I'm lying there in bed with her and she's like, there's something off about you. Like, you know, like you're acting kind of odd. And I go, well, that's because I'm not really me. You know, I'm actually an entity that travels between host to host, and I fix events that happen in the person's life in bad ways, kind of like Sam Beckett from Quantum Leap, but not just one event, multiple events in a lifetime, right? So I'm watching. So there's the guy, he's sleeping with her, and then there's this character who's kind of quantum leaping into the character, and then I'm watching this from his perspective. So I'm kind of hijacking someone who's already hijacking that consciousness, right? So. And then she says, thank you for telling me like the truth. Then all of a sudden her accent changes. So it becomes like an English accent. And she starts telling me, she's like, thank you for telling me. My name is Anne Christie. Look me up. Not Agatha Christie, but Anne Christie. And I'm an author, right?
Okay.
So I wake up and I'm like over my computer. I'm like, Anne Christie, and then the first thing pops up, Agatha Christie. I'm like, fuck, because she knew. It's like she knew the search was going to lead me to Agatha Christie. So anyway, I start looking her up, and this in the dream, I got the idea that it was either 1961 or 1963. I couldn't figure out what was going on. So I see the dream. So I find this person, and now she's in her like late 70s, early 80s, and then I go and I find pictures of her before. And she's the exact same person I just had the dream of, like, you know, half an hour before when I woke up, right?
Yeah.
So it's crazy, right? So I contact her I contact her on her website. I try to order a painting because she paints.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I made a fake name, and I'm just like trying to, I'm like, is this person alive? Like, and then I finally found an Instagram page, and like I tried to add her as a friend. She wouldn't contact me. She wouldn't respond at all. I was trying to buy pictures. I was trying to like just do any kind of contact wouldn't work. I added her on Instagram.
Uh-huh.
I thought nothing would happen. So she added me on Instagram, and that's about the most that happened. But it's a weird, weird story.
All right. That's cool. I like that one. And you know,
but she writes books on psychic phenomenon.
Okay.
So there's definitely a connection there. But the idea that there might be entities out there that go and do quantum leaps, and that they don't just change one event in your life, but they change many, many events in your life, is kind of interesting.
I agree. That is kind of interesting. All right there, Sandman. I'm going to hit some super chats here, and I appreciate your time. I really do.
All right. So you need – can I – am I out of here? Or
no,
you
no.
Want
you,
me
can,
to kind
you can
of
hang out in the back. It's fine. It's all, no big deal. I'm just going through some super chats here. And we got here from Seth Rich, Canadian, $10. Thank you. Crazy Horse had a dream of being betrayed and killed years before it happened. Yep. There's always some asshole out there doing shit like that. Betrayal is very common of human beings. Let's see if we got anything else on here. All right. I saw a few more on here. Well, maybe they dropped off. All right. Let's see. Let's go to... We got one here on Mungo Harry, $20 on MGTOW. Happy Halloween, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Okay. We had three or four on Facebook or on YouTube. I have no idea what happened to them. They dropped off. So let's see what we got going on here. All right. Let's go to Odyssey here. Hang on. All right. Okay. Odyssey is not working out so well. We got $5 from K-Camer and $1 from Jackal the Emperor. I can't see the if there was comments attached to those, I can't see them at this time. I apologize. Yeah, Blake is way better at the Super Chat thing than I am. Let's see what we got here. Okay. All right. Let's see what we got going on here. All right. Let's go to the email.
While you're looking, I can share a quick story with sure. Elon Musk that just happened today. It was hilarious. He showed up at the Twitter headquarters and he brought a sink with him, like sink. And he said, "I'm here. Let that sink in." It was just the cheesiest friggin' joke.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember I was watching that today. Tim Pool covered it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Tim Pool covers this stuff pretty good. Okay. Let's see. I got several paranormal stories that are quite large, and I'm probably going to have to do a separate video to cover those because they're so big. I mean, we're talking like one's three pages, one's a page and a half. So I can't really... dig into that so much. So,
see, what's important is if we can take these stories and kind of write them down and have like a book of them, because we're making videos, so they're going to survive in some form or another, but hopefully.
Well, I'm going to be honest, I have enough. I could actually probably write a book of ghost stories.
The crazy thing is if you don't write them down, you're going to forget them at some point, right?
You're right. And you know what? I mean, I've already written books, so it's not like I don't know how to do that. I mean, okay. I got like maybe 70 or 80, you know, really good ghost stories that are floating around in my thinking meat. And I used to write them down a long time ago when I used to journal. I just got to find that and see if I can, I could easily do and I could make it like military themed. Think that would be cool. So all right, so that's all I got right now. I don't know what's going on in the super chats. It's not my strong suit. This is the first time I use this equipment. I'm gonna have to
unfold. Somebody's saying Big Chad the Mad Lad says, "In dreams I see some people's deaths a day or two before they die. It happens even if I never met them before."
Really?
Been happening since I was 10.
My aunt has that, like my mother's sister.
Okay.
When somebody in the family is either going to die or they're on death's door, she'll usually know of it about a week ahead of time because she'll have a dream. And there's usually some kind of dividing line. And then like when she saw when my grandfather died, like she was in this big field, and then on one side was all of the relatives that, you know, she had met some of them in her lifetime, but some of them were extended family she had never met. And, you know, and they're like, yeah, well, Bill's going to be here really soon. She goes, what? Bill can't be here. You know, he's still alive. And they're like, oh, yeah. And like literally 7 days later, my grandfather expires.
Wow.
Yeah, that happened all the time. Let's see what we got going on. All right. So I promised everyone when we first started, when I talked about the board behind me here, and I went through the three levels of hauntings. I talked about the good ones, the bad ones, residual, intelligent, and the areas right here. And I told them I'd talk about some ghost stories from when I first moved to Berkeley, like the end of seventh grade. And like we moved into the house. It's an older house. It was really in a state of severe disrepair. There was an older woman who had passed away at the hospital who had lived there. And apparently it was a lesbian couple, had lived in the house for decades. And one of the ladies died in the house. And then the other one lived in the house for another 8 years. And then she died in the hospital nearby. And anyway, you know, my mother, you know, cut up all the carpeting. We're stripping the floors, we're painting, we're doing the whole deal. And, you know, I was a young kid. My uncle was there. He's an asshole, but that's another story. And so we get the house livable, we move in, and things start happening. At first, they're very mild. Like, you'd come down in the morning, and like the cupboards in the kitchen would be open, nothing would be smashed. They'd just be open. That's, you know, I got yelled at a few times for that by my mother. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And about a year after that, it's about sometime between 2 and 4 in the morning, I'm upstairs sleeping in my room. And I got my dog with me. And I hear like something fall and break downstairs. You know, like my mother wakes up, she comes to my door, and she's like all hysterical. Somebody's downstairs. Ah! So I'm like, okay, I go down there with a baseball bat. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm not that old. I mean, it's not like I can do anything, but I'm the man of the house, and that's the way it rolls. And I go down there in the kitchen. There is one of those heavy glass tops that goes on one of those pedestals you put a cake on. And it sits up about 6 or 7 inches, and it fits in there. And the top, like the glass part, goes into a groove that's in the glass below it, so making it like semi-airtight. And then the base was on the top of the refrigerator, all the way against the wall. And then in front of it, there was like napkins and paper towel. So somehow in the middle of the night, the top was lifted out of the groove, moved 2.5 feet, and then dropped on the floor. That's the only way that could have happened. And that one, you know, was nutty. And the one that really freaked me out the most, and my mother, for a hot second after this, was actually contemplating selling the house and moving somewhere else. And this, in my opinion, was a direct attack against my sister, my younger sister. Now, the way it started is she used to like to sit in this one chair, and it was a leather armchair, and we had it for years. You know, I literally laid in that thing myself hundreds of times. It was just a padded leather chair. And I remember I'm on the floor watching TV. My mom's on the couch behind me. And all of a sudden, my sister jumps off the chair, covered in blood, screaming her lungs out. And like my mother and I run up there, we're trying to figure out where she's bleeding from. And like behind on her tricep, there was a perfect puncture hole that bled profusely for about 20 minutes. Like, I mean, it took like direct pressure. It was insane. My mother was way upset and freaking out. And literally she's like, okay, you know, we got her cleaned up, you know, and we, you know, the dining room was like right to our left and we're working on her. And I notice like the light is kind of shifting around. I look over and the chandelier in the dining room is moving about 8 inches side to side. So I'm like, okay. So I searched that chair top to bottom. I found nothing that possibly could have punctured her and caused that kind of bleeding. And she was like 8. All right. And she was just sitting there. It was totally unexplainable. So, you know, and that instance was the only time where we had the highest level of, you know, paranormal haunting activity, you know, i.e., you know, harmful touching, in my opinion. And that royally just, my mother was literally like, I remember talking, you know, hearing my mom talk to her sister on the phone, actually contemplating, you know, selling the house and doing other things. I thought that was pretty good.
You know what's really interesting? You get, like, we have tons of experiences. And then I talk to some people and they have zero. Like, how does that happen statistically?
I don't know. I mean, I think I'm sensitive to it, to be honest. I always have been. I just not, you know, I'm not one of those uber psychics that walks in and can tell you everything about your life or anything. I just get feelings. And I think we all have those. It's just for whatever reason, you know, from a very young age, I just paid attention to them more.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, like, everything kind of activated when I took some lorazepam to calm down. I went to this panic state. Mm-hmm. And then I took just one pill. It knocked me out for almost like 18, 19 hours.
Yeah.
I woke up and then all of a sudden I could see precognitive things and dreams from that point on. It was mm-hmm. really weird. That's the stuff that Jordan Peterson was stuck on for years.
So, oh, yeah, yeah. I've taken that stuff before. I didn't have anything like that happen.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on the person, right? How they react with the drug.
Yeah. And here's the last story for the evening before we shut this down. All right. Now, I bought another house in the same city of Berkeley because the house that I lived in when I was going to high school, my mother had lost it, got foreclosed on. Long story, not going to go into it. Bought another house. Now, it just turns out that this new house was built in like 1905, and it had 3 different upgrades done to it over the years. And that house was a farmhouse, and there was a huge apple orchard and pear tree orchard connected to the property. It was, you know, pretty big. Now, I'm not the only one who's seen this apparition. I've seen it about 3 or 4 times since I've owned the house. My mother has seen it, and my nephews have seen it. And I believe one of my daughters saw it, you know, out of the corner of her eye just once. But it's a dude wearing a straw hat walking around my property. Like, the first time I saw him, I literally was in the house 4 months. And I'm watching TV, and there's a side window to my right. And you, from watching TV, you could just catch it out of your peripheral vision. And somebody walks right by the window. I'm like, what the fuck? I get up. I'm like, what? So in, there's like 8 inches of snow on the ground. And then you look through the dining room. There's 3 more windows right there, but there's like a very, very thin white curtain there. So you can see through it, but people can't see in. I see, plain as day, I see the dude walk by the 3 windows. And I'm like, well, I'm assuming that maybe it's the meter reader. I don't know, because on that side of the house is the gas meter and the water heater, or water meter. I go to the back door, open it up, and there are no footprints in the snow. Nada. That really wigged me out. And I've, throughout the years, I've seen glimpses of them go by windows. Only on one other time did I see him for a split instance, when it was in the summer. We were barbecuing out back. I turned everything up. We were eating in the house. It got dark. My mom, you know, she's like, "Hey, it's going to rain. Go put the top on the barbecue." So I'm like, "Okay." I go out there, and I reach down, pick up the top of the barbecue, look up, and there's Mr. Straw Hat Man just for a second. Just literally, I was like, and he was gone. And I was like, "Okay, take that as a hint." I locked the door, went to bed. But yeah, and the way I think, you know, it is, it's just a guy who was our farmer. He owned the house in the past. He managed the apple trees and the orchards. And he still, for whatever reason, he's still doing the job.
Or
it could be residual, in my opinion. I think it is residual, to be honest with you. But you never know. Let's see what we got here. All right, Sandman. I think we're going to pack it in today. We're at...
All right, sounds good.
What would we just cross over?
Don't cross over, please.
No. Yeah, all right. We're right at the 2-hour mark. All right.
Okay, I'm out of here. Talk to you guys later.
All right. Hey, thanks for calling in, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. All right, later.
All right, take it easy, man. All right.